Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Stephanie, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Connect Education Workshop. And also, this is a program done also in collaboration with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. The program is Coping with the Stresses of Caregiving When Your Loved One Has Triple Negative Breast Cancer. And this is part two of a two-part series, and today's a collaborative effort, not only with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, but a number of other cancer organizations as well. And those organizations have helped actually to, particularly, of course, the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, in helping to reach out to all of you on the call today. And we have over 558 participants on the call today, and you come from all of the United States. And we also have international participants from Canada, Costa Rica, Romania, United Kingdom, and Venezuela, so really an international audience as well. And we're delighted to have so many of you on the call today. Now, this program today is supported by the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. We really want to thank them for their support. And additional support is provided by AbbVie and Celldex Therapeutics. So we really thank them all for supporting the program today and for this collaboration amongst the funders to make this program possible. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Sierra O'Sullivan. Dr. O'Sullivan is Assistant Professor of Oncology, Mayo Clinic. And Dr. O'Sullivan is going to discuss the treatment of triple-negative breast cancer and the important role of the caregiver with the healthcare team. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. O'Sullivan.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining us. I'm briefly going to give an overview with regards to the management of triple-negative breast cancer and also discuss the role of the caregiver with regards to interactions with the medical team. So triple-negative breast cancer is essentially breast cancers that have negative estrogen receptors, progesterone receptors, and HER2 receptors. And this accounts for approximately 15% of all breast cancer diagnoses. The majority of these cancers are aggressive and not easily detected by screening mammograms. Left untreated, triple-negative breast cancer has a poorer prognosis than treated HER2-positive cancers. However, the good news is that chemotherapy often works better for these cancers than it does for patients with hormone receptor positive cancers. Further, patients with triple negative breast cancer who make it 5 years without a recurrence have a lower risk of cancer recurrence later, although hormone receptor positive cancers can recur decades after the initial diagnosis. Clinical trials of promising new treatments are in progress, for example, the PARP inhibitors. So with regards to the stages of triple-negative breast cancer, there are four stages, and the first stage is early disease, whereby the tumor is confined to the breast and is lymph node negative. And in stage two disease, the tumor at that point has become larger and has spread to ipsilateral axillary lymph nodes and is node positive. Stage 3 triple-negative breast cancer is locally advanced disease whereby the tumor has spread to the superficial structures of the chest wall and involves the ipsilateral internal mammary lymph nodes. And finally, stage 4 breast cancer is whereby patients have advanced or metastatic disease which is present at distant sites in the body such as the bone, liver, lymph nodes, lungs, or brain. So with regards to the treatment of patients with stage 1 to 3 triple-negative breast cancer, the goals of treatment are to cure, whereas for patients with stage 4 triple-negative breast cancer, our goals are to control and to optimize quality and length of life. So with regards to the treatments that we have specifically for triple-negative breast cancer, we have local treatments and systemic treatments. So local treatments focus on the breast and the region of the chest wall and include surgery and radiation. And the goals of local treatments are to remove visible disease, i.e. at surgery, and get rid of microscopic cancer deposits, which may still be present in the breast and armpit areas. Also, we aim to prevent breast cancer recurrence in the breast, the armpit, or axilla, whereas systemic treatments are treatments that target the whole body, such as chemotherapy or experimental therapies. The goals of systemic treatments are to eradicate microscopic cancer deposits, which may be present elsewhere in the body, and prevent breast cancer recurrence in other parts of the body, and also to shrink these deposits. So that's for patients with stage 1 to 3 disease, whereby the goals of treatment are still curative. With regards to surgical treatments for triple-negative breast cancer, patients with stage 1 to 3 triple-negative breast cancer are typically offered either a mastectomy versus breast conservation surgery, or depending on the surgeon's recommendations, a sentinel lymph node biopsy and axillary lymph node dissection. And some patients, it could be patient preference or the identification of a genetic mutation, may opt for preventative surgery, so bilateral mastectomies in the setting of patients who have a tumor in one breast. For larger tumors, preoperative or neoadjuvant chemotherapy may be given. For patients with stage 4 triple-negative breast cancer, surgery is not usually part of the treatment plan if the patient is found to have stage 4 disease to begin with. With regards to radiation therapy for patients with triple-negative breast cancer, it is generally recommended for patients with stage 1 through 3 disease for all patients who've had a lumpectomy or after a mastectomy whereby patients have larger tumors that measure 5 centimeters or more or are high-grade and lymph node positive. And again, the goal is to eradicate microdeposits of cancer that may remain in the region of the breast after surgery, and the goal is cure. Radiation still has a role in the treatment of patients with stage 4 triple-negative breast cancer, and at that point it is recommended to relieve cancer-related symptoms such as breathless or cancer-related pain and to improve quality of life overall with the goal of controlling the disease. With regards to chemotherapy for triple-negative breast cancer, the chemotherapy that is administered in the curative setting, so stage 1 to 3 triple-negative breast cancer, involves several drugs to optimize cell kill and prevent resistance to chemotherapy. And these medications typically include a combination of medications called anthracyclines, such as doxorubicin or epirubicin, taxanes, such as docetaxel and paclitaxel, and cyclophosphamide. Preoperative chemotherapy regimens for locally advanced or larger tumors may also include carboplatin. This is especially for patients with BRCA1 or BRCA2 mutations, or who have disease that is just not shrinking down quickly on chemotherapy. The aim of preoperative chemotherapy is for the tumor to have vanished completely in the breast and the lymph nodes at the time of surgery, which is what we call a pathological complete response. And obtaining a pathological complete response, if you have preoperative chemotherapy for triple-negative breast cancer, is a favorable feature, although it is important to note that just because you do not have a pathological complete response at the time of surgery, cure from the triple-negative breast cancer is still possible. Further, there is some other evidence to suggest that oral capecitabine, a chemotherapy medication, after preoperative chemotherapy in surgery, is beneficial in patients with triple-negative breast cancer who do not achieve a pathological complete response. In the stage 4 setting, chemotherapy is given with palliative intent. The chemotherapy drugs are usually given as single agents unless a rapid response is needed for patients who have a high burden of disease or are very symptomatic. There are a number of active drugs which include taxanes, anthracyclines, platinums, antimicrotubular agents such as eribulin, fenofibrine, or ixabepilone, antimetabolite drugs such as gemcitabine or capecitabine, alkylating agents such as cyclophosphamide, and less frequently topoisomerase inhibitors such as etoposide. With regards to clinical trial participation, the pros and cons from a patient perspective is that you may benefit from a new treatment and it is an opportunity to contribute towards medical science. Also, patients often welcome the opportunity to take an active role in your own healthcare and decision-making. However, it's important to notice that there are cons in that it's unknown whether the study treatment will work. You may need to make additional trips to hospital and spend more time there getting extra scans and blood work and so on and so forth. And the trials may need you to keep a detailed log of the symptoms in some cases. And all of the study treatments typically need to be done at the center where the clinical trial is being conducted. With regard to experimental agents for the treatment of triple-negative breast cancer currently in clinical trial, immunotherapy studies are currently in progress in the stage 4 setting, such as studies of pembrolizumab, and indeed some of my patients have been able to access pembrolizumab on a compassionate basis. Studies of agents called PARP inhibitors are also in progress, and they're of particular interest in patients with triple-negative breast cancer. And also, there is some interest in treating patients who have androgen receptor-positive triple-negative breast cancer with androgen receptor inhibitors on clinical studies. Other agents that are of interest and are being investigated include experimental drugs that target pathways in the breast cancer cells, such as PI3 kinase inhibitors and HDAC inhibitors. And while most of these studies focus on patients with stage 4 disease, some preoperative chemotherapy studies are also available, such as the large I-SPY2 study, which looks at shrinking down patients' tumors with standard chemotherapy, plus or minus an investigational therapy. Briefly touching on the important role of the caregiver with the healthcare team, the caregiver has an integral role in the whole process in that you are a source of great comfort to your relative and can act as your relative's advocate. And ways that this might be helpful are, you know, preparing questions or thinking through potential questions before medical appointments, also taking notes and answering questions during the appointments, encouraging your relative to express his or her hopes and fears with regards to the cancer diagnosis. Additionally, it's important to support the request for a second opinion if he or she desires it. And also, it can be very useful for the patient if he or she has a relative who is able to gather and collect information, so such as a list of contact numbers for care providers and results of important tests and biopsies and so on and so forth to date. And also, it's important for us, you know, as physicians to be aware, of course, that oncology patients have complex needs. So, you know, I think it's also very helpful when a patient's relative asks or reminds us about the availability of resources that can provide practical, emotional, spiritual, and other support as applicable, be it financial or otherwise, for both you and your relative. And I think the others will touch a bit more on these issues. However, there are a number of useful resources that you can certainly access, certainly via the Susan G. Komen Foundation and also the Mayo Clinic Clinical Trials Network and the Cancer Hope Network. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Sullivan. That was really outstanding and just really a lovely introduction to the entire call and setting the context for the important role of both the treatment team and, of course, the caregiver role in terms of working with the healthcare team and supporting the person coming in for treatment. So thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Aaron Kent. Dr. Kent is epidemiologist and program director, Outcomes Research Branch, Healthcare Delivery Research Program, Division of Cancer Control and Population Sciences, the National Cancer Institute. And Dr. Kent is going to address becoming a caregiver for your loved one with triple-negative breast cancer, what the research tells us about informal caregivers, challenges in communicating with the healthcare team, and self-care tips for managing stress. So it's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Kent.
Thank you so much, Carolyn, and I'm honored to be invited by Cancer Care and to be speaking today with you all on this very important topic of coping with the stress of caregiving for a loved one with triple-negative breast cancer. I want to first indicate, as Carolyn mentioned, I'm both a researcher and program director at the National Cancer Institute, and much of my work has focused on cancer patient outcomes, including quality of life, the impact that cancer has on families, and cancer caregiving. I'm not, however, a clinician, so I do not have experience providing direct medical or psychosocial care. My role today, however, is to tell you about what the research tells us about being an informal or family caregiver for someone with cancer. A recent patient survey led by Cancer Care found that the impact of cancer on family was the number one concern of cancer patients, indicating how critically important it is that we pay attention to cancer patients' families in addition to the patients themselves. So informal or family caregivers is a term that we use for people who help individuals with cancer meet their day-to-day needs, or what we sometimes call activities of daily living. They may be spouses, partners, children, relatives, friends, or neighbors, or even coworkers. The tasks they may help with can be many and varied, including not only things like helping prepare meals, go to the grocery store, housekeeping, but also bathing and eating. They can also include what we call medical or nursing tasks, things like administering medication, changing bandages, and helping with things like the maintenance of infusion ports and catheters. Caregivers can also help by accompanying their loved ones, as Dr. O'Sullivan said, to medical appointments, communicating and coordinating with healthcare providers, and sometimes advocating for services for their loved one. So it is difficult to estimate exactly how many people are serving in this role at a given time in the U.S., especially and in particularly for patients who have triple negative breast cancer. Some of the best estimates we have come from an organization called the National Alliance for Caregiving, which conducts a survey of caregivers nationwide once about every 5 years. Their most recent estimate is that approximately 43.5 million adults are serving as a caregiver for a loved one with a serious medical condition. And of those, they estimate that about 2.8 million are serving as a caregiver for someone with cancer. So although the estimates will vary, it is safe to say that there are thousands of people right now who fit that role and thousands more to come. Rosalind Carter, former First Lady and caregiving champion, has been quoted as saying there are only four kinds of people in the world: those who have been caregivers, those who are currently caregivers, those who will be caregivers, and those who will need a caregiver. Now, research has shown that there can be benefit finding or positive aspects of being a caregiver. At the same time, we also know that there can be many challenging aspects of being a caregiver, particularly for those people who are caregiving for many, we often cut it at about 20 hours a week or more. A recent cancer-specific analysis was sponsored by the National Cancer Institute and Cancer Support Community and led by the National Alliance for Caregivers, and it was conducted using data from the 2015 Caregiving in the U.S. study, so these are fairly recent data. And this study found that cancer caregivers on average spend over 32 hours per week providing care to their loved one, which is actually more than those whose care recipients had other conditions. Cancer caregiving tends to be more what we call episodic and intense than caregiving for those with other health conditions. Cancer caregivers more often help with activities of daily living, like I previously mentioned, than other caregivers. Yet despite this involvement, many cancer caregivers have not had conversations with doctors, nurses, or other healthcare providers about their needs. Just over half have discussed their loved one's care needs with a provider, while less than a third have discussed their own self-care needs. In addition, about 40% reported having performed complex medical nursing tasks without any prior training or preparation. And in the same study, half of cancer caregivers reported feeling high levels of emotional stress, and about one quarter reported financial strain. Other studies have shown that cancer caregivers can face sleep disturbance and poor psychological outcomes like depression and anxiety. Caregivers often neglect self-care needs in service of caring for their loved ones, and they may not be asked enough about their own health needs, and this is a critical area for both further research development and a needed cultural change in clinical practice. In addition, when many patients end or have a break in their cancer treatment and have to adjust to what we often call a new normal, they often report high anxiety related to their cancer coming back, which we term as fear of recurrence. But it isn't just survivors who often experience that fear. We know that their family members often do too, but we don't typically recognize that fear or adequately address it among caregivers. And although these findings that I just listed may seem pretty negative, I provided these findings to you to help normalize any feelings that as caregivers those may have about the stresses of caregiving. It is normal to feel like it is hard, and it is important to reach out for help. Social support is critical. Support should be thought of in a multidimensional way, along the lines of both instrumental support, so things like preparing meals, providing transportation to appointments, help with childcare, and emotional support, things like providing a listening ear, companionship, and affection. Both kinds of social support are important and can benefit both patients and caregivers. In fact, in situations where there is a network of carers, but the patient at the center can be the most advantageous. Respite care programs, which allow caregivers a break by providing paid caregiving services during that break time, either during certain hours of the day or for days at a time, can also offer caregivers some relief, although these services are often underused. It is not uncommon for caregivers to try to take on the role of, quote-unquote, moving through and, quote-unquote, doing what needs to be done. And these approaches have been looked at in particular among male caregivers of women with breast cancer, and I mean breast cancer in general here. Guilt is also an emotion that some caregivers face. But the problem is, however, that a lack of engagement and an appraisal of one's own feelings can lead to many caregivers experiencing lower quality of life or even what is sometimes termed suffering in silence. For some people, spirituality, faith, and religious practice can help patients and caregivers cope with cancer. For many, fostering feelings of hope and managing feelings of guilt can be very, very helpful. And for others, prioritizing sleep, exercise, and healthy eating can be critically important to coping with the stresses of caregiving. In addition, there have been many formal interventions delivered by healthcare professionals developed to support caregivers and patients cope with cancer. These interventions are generally divided into three different categories. So the first, those that are psychoeducational, or those to help educate caregivers about how to help their care recipients through symptom management. Two, skills training. So those that are designed to promote better coping skills, and three, therapeutic counseling interventions. There are some that have significantly reduced burden, increased confidence to take on the role of caregiving, and improved quality of life. The more successful interventions are generally longer in duration and include a symptom management training component. And increasingly, more interventions are being developed that can be delivered at a distance, so either over the phone or the internet, and these are showing promising results for many caregivers and their care recipients. A few other important tips to consider for caregivers specifically. It's important to know that if you wish to speak to your loved one's healthcare team directly, you will often need to get written permission from him or her, given what we call the HIPAA Act, or the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, which governs how patients control and release their health information. In addition, another piece of legislation that's important to know about is the Family Medical Leave Act, shortened to FMLA or FEMLA, as it's sometimes called, which requires that most employers, and what fits in this category, generally companies with 50 or more employees, grant their employees up to 12 weeks of unpaid job-protected leave per year for family members to get needed time to care for either a spouse, parent, or child. It's important to speak with your employer directly, though, to learn about unpaid time off that might be available. I also want to stress that there is help. There is much help and many resources out there for caregivers. So the National Cancer Institute has a guide on our website called Family Caregivers in Cancer. And I should also mention here that these links will be provided to you, so I don't feel that you have to scribble all of these down. Other organizations include Cancer Care, of course, have developed additional materials to provide resources and tips to help manage the stresses of caregiving. Other organizations include the American Cancer Society, which has a page dedicated to caregivers, the Cancer Support Community, Family Caregiving Alliance, and the National Alliance for Caregiving all have resources for caregivers. The National Cancer Institute maintains a database of evidence-based interventions, and it's named Research Test Intervention Programs. And these are ones that are considered ready for broad dissemination, and some of these target cancer caregivers specifically. And finally, the last organization I want to mention is the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, which Dr. Messner mentioned earlier, has a website with a lot of useful information, including lists of questions to take to doctor's appointments and a guide oriented toward caregivers specifically. Again, a list of the links of these resources will be provided after the teleconference. And I also wanted to mention that there is recently enacted state-based legislation developed and sponsored by the American Association of Retired Persons, or AARP, called the CARE Act. And this stands for Caregiver Advise, Record, and Enable Act. There are three parts of the act aimed at supporting patients who are hospitalized and their caregivers. The record part of the act simply requires that there be an assessment of whether there is a caregiver for a patient that's being admitted to the hospital, and if there is, that person's name and contact information needs to be recorded upon admission. Secondly, the advise part of the act states that a person, that caregiver is needed to be advised prior to the patient's discharge. And thirdly, the enable part of the act indicates that caregivers be involved in discharge planning to prepare both the patient and caregiver for transition to home. As of right now, 32 states have either introduced or passed legislation enacting the CARE Act. And again, a link to more information about the CARE Act will be provided. So with that, I just want to thank everyone for listening and joining this teleconference, and I'm happy to answer questions in the question and answer component of this call. And with that, I'll go ahead and hand it back over to Dr. Messner. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Kemp. That was really outstanding and so much information for everybody and really so much validation or just awareness of the research supporting all the emotions and feelings and things that people are experiencing, and just to have that all backed up, really, that people know that it's a norm to feel the way they're feeling and all the resources. So, and it's true what Dr. Kemp said. We will be sending out to all of you all the links and resources to any of the organizations that are mentioned by our speakers, so you'll be getting that as a follow-up to this call, so just to be aware of that. And our next speaker is Ms. Haley Dinneman. Ms. Dinneman is a lawyer. She's co-founder and executive director of the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, who have supported today's program, who also support Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation hotline. And so I'm going to actually turn the program over to Ms. Dinneman, who's just an amazing person in terms of all that she has been so generous in terms of supporting, in terms of programming. Ms. Dinneman?
Thank you so much for that introduction, Dr. Messner. I want to take a moment to thank our partners at CancerCare and my fellow presenters for the absolutely excellent overview and updates on TNBC and its impact on caregivers. Today's webinar and teleconference is one of many programs offered by the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. All of our programming is specifically designed to address the needs of the TNBC community, from patients and survivors to caregivers and loved ones. And to all the caregivers on this call, I want you to know that when I speak of the triple negative breast cancer community, I speak of you as well. I'd like to highlight a few of our programmatic offerings, and I sincerely hope that you'll take advantage of them and encourage those you're caring for to do the same. First, we have numerous educational brochures that are available in print or also with free downloads from our website. Our popular fact sheets for caregivers, our Understanding TNBC brochure, and our recently released treatment guide for patients and their families were all developed with input from members of our TNBC community as well as esteemed medical experts in the area of TNBC. These brochures, as well as all of our other educational materials, have special sections addressing issues of particular interest to certain members of our TNBC community, including caregivers, African American and Latina women, those with BRCA mutations, and those with early stage diagnosis, and of course, those with metastatic disease as well. We work hard to make sure that every member of our TNBC community can find relevant information and practical guidance in these materials, so I hope you'll use them to your benefit. Also, our website, tnbcfoundation.org, offers a TNBC-specific clinical trials matching service, a constantly updated TNBC news section, and what's become a favorite of our community is our online discussion forum. These forums allow you to easily connect with other caregivers and with women who are living with triple negative breast cancer any time of the day or night. Our community, which includes thousands of women from the newly diagnosed to many long-term survivors, use the forums to ask questions about treatment, about how to manage their side effects, how to help loved ones, and anything else related to triple negative breast cancer. But most importantly, our discussion forums offer consistent support. So if you aren't currently registered for the forums, you should consider joining them. You can even join anonymously. I honestly can't stress enough how helpful they've been to so many women and their families and caregivers as well. Of course, if you feel that you would benefit more from in-person meetings, I hope you'll consider joining us for our next fall conference weekend. The TNBC Foundation partners with Living Beyond Breast Cancer every year to provide you with specific triple negative program, which includes many elements for caregivers. Our next conference won't take place until next fall, but it's never too late to start planning. So if you're interested, please look out for information about the program. And we even offer travel grants for caregivers to help defray the cost of attending. In the meantime, I hope you'll join us as we begin planning our programming for our national TNBC Day campaign, beginning on March 3rd and lasting throughout the month of March. We'll once again roll out our campaign to increase awareness of TNBC, to provide our community with opportunities for education and support, and to support fundraising efforts for TNBC research. So many of you on this call have been supporting the TNBC Foundation-led effort for many years, planning and executing amazing events and email campaigns every March. I want to thank you for helping us spread the word. And just like in past years, I'm so proud to be able to say that 100% of the funds raised by members of our community for Triple Negative Breast Cancer Day will go to support TNBC-specific research. And finally, it goes without saying that medical research is extremely important to our foundation. We not only support cutting-edge research at leading medical institutions, but we work hard to inform you, our TNBC community, about any new developments in the area. We have expert scientific bloggers at all the major medical conferences, including ASCO, AACR, and SABCS, and they work to provide our community with up-to-the-minute updates on new and emerging research and treatment options. So if you're interested in receiving these updates, please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We'll next be blogging from SABCS in December. So we hope we connect with you all soon, whether it's on social media, by phone, online at tnbcfoundation.org, or live at one of the many TNBC Day events that will take place this March. Once again, thank you again for joining us, and I guess I'll now turn the program back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Dinnerman. That was really excellent. It's just really such a wonderful resource for everybody on the call, just a wonderful organization, and it does so innovative in its offering services specifically to the triple negative breast cancer community. So thank you so much for all that you do and also for your great generosity, Haley. So thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Carly O'Brien. Ms. O'Brien is an oncology social worker, and she's our caregiver program coordinator at Cancer Care. And Ms. O'Brien is going to be addressing coping with each day, weekends, special occasions, and holidays, birthdays, managing family and friends, long-distance caregiving, and resources for caregivers, including the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation helpline. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Ms. O'Brien.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner. I'm very happy to be part of this call, and it's really encouraging and inspiring to hear how many resources and how much research and information there is available to caregivers, specifically caregivers of those with triple negative breast cancer. So I want to talk with you a little bit about just managing stress. So managing the stresses of everyday life can be challenging for anyone, but adding the impact of a loved one's cancer can be especially taxing, both for the person with cancer and also their caregivers. So caregivers, paying attention to your loved one's physical and emotional needs, as well as your own, are really important elements that can help you make the most of each day, as well as those special occasions that come up. Check in with yourself about what your priorities are each day, and be sure to be intentional with those things that are important to you. To help you cope with each day, enlist the support of friends, family, or professional support to help you make sense out of what your needs are and to strategize about how you can work to get them met. Also, being flexible and patient with yourself and your loved one can help you to make the most of your experience as a caregiver. And although we do talk a lot about the stresses and challenges of caregiving, it's equally important to remember the opportunities that can come along with this role. A clearer understanding of your loved one's needs as well as your own, a stronger connection or bond with your loved one, improved communication, and the ability to just appreciate the simple moments together. Those are just a few of those potential opportunities. And a lot of this comes up during weekends, special occasions, and birthdays. Reflecting on these opportunities often, rather than just focusing on the challenges, can offer you a sense of hope and comfort that can be quite empowering. Special occasions, birthdays, and other events often represent times of celebration and connecting with loved ones. Coping with cancer and caregiving during these special days can be stressful. Many caregivers feel that there are a lot of expectations placed upon them for how they should approach these kinds of events. This can feel really overwhelming. I'd encourage you caregivers to consider what makes the most sense for you and your loved one and be mindful to not give in to those shoulds. There are many things that caregivers can do to help themselves and their loved ones maximize these events and occasions. You can start by considering what each specific event or celebration means to you. What are the most important elements of it? Is it the people, the place, a certain tradition or ritual? Being more mindful of the significance of the event can be a helpful starting place in beginning to really think a little bit more deeply about how cancer can fit into the picture rather than the other way around. Planning ahead can also be helpful. Try and anticipate these occasions before they happen. Consider what you and your loved one can tolerate for this particular event and give yourself flexibility to create new traditions. And remember, managing expectations is an important part of coping with a loved one's cancer diagnosis. So consider what traditions you may need to take a pass on or change. Establishing new traditions with close family and friends might allow both the person with cancer and their caregiver to feel more satisfied and supported during these celebrations. And caregivers, remember to give yourself a break. So many caregivers put pressure on themselves to be able to do it all. So recognize your efforts and know that you're doing the very best that you can. And don't hesitate to reach out for support of your own by asking for help when you need it. You can enlist the support of friends or family, talk with your loved one's medical team. They often have really good suggestions, tips, or support to help you through these events and occasions, or even just those day-to-day things that come up. I'd also like to talk with you a little bit about managing family and friends. You know that phrase, it takes a village? That's definitely true when it comes to supporting a loved one with cancer and in getting the support that you need to be the best caregiver possible. Managing that village and the family and friends who are in your network of support, however, can be a new experience. First, when it comes to getting the support that you need as a caregiver, do what you can to honor and maintain friendships, relationships, and traditions that you had before cancer. Having that consistency and stability throughout your experience as a caregiver can just leave you feeling more like yourself. Managing these relationships well can be a real comfort and can help you to feel grounded. When it comes to managing family and friends in the context of your loved one's cancer care, remember that everyone has their own experience with cancer and caregiving. Oftentimes, this results in well-intended advice or suggestions. Communicating with family and friends about what feels helpful and what doesn't can help to make this support the most positive and beneficial for you. Similarly, managing your expectations of others can help maximize the support that's available to you and your loved ones. This means recognizing the supports you have available and understanding what their strengths are. Consider who is good at what and start there when it comes to asking for help. And know that support often comes in unexpected ways. So be sure to keep your eyes open for those who might be ready and willing to jump in, even if it's not what you might have had in mind to begin with. It's common for friends and family to want information and updates about your loved one and how they're doing. They might have questions and may look to you for answers. Decide what information you and your loved one feel comfortable sharing, and keep in mind that there's not a one-size-fits-all approach to giving updates and news. And chances are other family and friends want to be involved. You can help to manage this by delegating certain tasks and asking for their help. This may help other friends and family to feel useful and involved while giving you and your loved one an additional layer of support. In talking about caregiving, we know that that sort of comes in untraditional ways. Many people with cancer have caregivers who live far away. We're going to refer to those folks as long-distance caregivers, and this is a really growing population. It's a term and an experience that can be unfamiliar and confusing, and I want to remind anyone who's fulfilling the role of long-distance caregiver that you can be a meaningful part of your loved one's cancer experience and their care, whether you live locally or are caring from far away. Caregivers who aren't local to their loved one can provide significant emotional support, a listening ear. They can offer a sense of camaraderie and social support for their loved ones, even if it's by phone, text, or email and Skype. Technology is definitely an advantage and can help you to feel connected and in the loop, so to speak. Staying in touch and being emotionally available to talk about difficult subjects often helps the patient to feel supported and can help the long-distance caregiver feel like they're contributing. Remember that this layer of emotional support is often as helpful as providing the physical day-to-day care. So it's important to keep that in mind and not to minimize that role. Caregivers can help with lots of practical tasks from far away, especially on the medical side of their loved one's care. Long-distance caregivers can coordinate medical appointments and make sure that records are in order. They can even get to know the medical team and advocate for their loved one's needs, regardless of their physical location. Consider sending your loved one a list of questions that you have. If they feel comfortable, they might be able to discuss them with their doctors and get some answers and clarity. This can, again, help you to feel involved and gets your questions answered, but reminds the patient that you're there for them. Long-distance caregivers can also help their loved ones with day-to-day things to help them get organized. They can, you know, take charge and manage household bills or finances, organize legal paperwork, and can be helpful in finding resources and information about things like updates in treatment, advanced directives, wills, and healthcare proxies. These are really important things to help ensure that your loved one is being well cared for on all levels and across the continuum of care. And you can also help your loved one to enlist additional support. You can arrange for other family and friends to drop off meals or coordinate transportation. You can learn about local support groups or workshops that they can attend and share that information. Patients often rely on their caregivers to take on some of this legwork when they don't have the energy. And since these tasks usually just take a phone call or email, they're really well suited for caregivers who aren't nearby. And long-distance caregivers often struggle with feelings of guilt. They wish that they could do more for their loved one. So remind yourself of all that you're doing rather than focusing on only on what you can't do. Give yourself credit for the efforts that you've made and check in with your loved one to see if they have any suggestions about how you can continue to be most helpful. And like some of my co-presenters spoke of earlier, remember to take care of yourself. Long-distance caregivers need support too. So reach out to a support group or contact a local social worker to help you make meaning out of your caregiver experience. Many of my co-presenters have already given a lot of information about other resources that are out there. So some of this might be a bit redundant, but I want you to know that there are lots of resources out there for caregivers, and we will help you find them as best as we can. So lots of resources exist for caregivers to link them to both information and support. As you may know, Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization that offers free supportive services for caregivers, including individual counseling and support groups. Our services are available in the New York tri-state area, over the phone, and online all across the country, and they're all provided by master's level oncology social workers. Cancer Care offers literature and information on topics like managing the practical concerns of a loved one's diagnosis, building a community of support, and coping with the stresses of caregiving. Many of our services are specifically geared at the needs of caregivers, but are also available to patients and the bereaved. We have a very easy-to-navigate website that you can visit at www.cancercare.org, or you can call our toll-free HOPE line at 1-800-813-4673 for more information. For those who have a loved one dealing with a triple negative breast cancer diagnosis, there's also disease-specific support available to you. As was mentioned earlier, Cancer Care has partnered with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation to offer free professional support services to patients, families, and health providers who are coping with a diagnosis of triple negative breast cancer. The Triple Negative Breast Cancer Helpline is staffed by experienced oncology social workers with specific knowledge of triple negative disease. The helpline staff can offer support and information and can be a good starting place in directing callers to other services like counseling, support, and information when appropriate. Feel free to call the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation's helpline at 877-880-TNBC, that's 8622, if you'd like to connect with them. Remember that many caregivers find that connecting with others in a similar situation is quite a powerful experience, helps them to feel supported and less alone. Resources like support groups such as those offered by Cancer Care can give caregivers some respite and time for themselves, practical tips on how to cope with challenges, and a sense of camaraderie and support, as well as a safe place to explore the emotional impact on caregiving. but there are other caregiver-focused organizations too. The Family Caregiver Alliance focuses solely on the needs of caregivers. They offer many resources on their website, including caregiving information and advice, various publications and fact sheets, and they have educational webinars. Check them out at www.caregiver.org. And there are some web-based services that can help caregivers to enlist more support and take care of themselves. Help for Cancer Caregivers, which you can find at www.helpforcancercaregivers.org, is an online resource that can help to manage distress and burnout, provides resources on dealing with practical matters, and allows caregivers to just take stock and take care of themselves. It helps you to assess and track your coping over time with questionnaires and surveys, and this can really help ensure that your own care is being well managed. My Cancer Circle is a free online community that can help you coordinate friends and family to help you manage your caregiving tasks. Their website is mycancercircle.lotsofhelpinghands.com. Caregivers start by creating a private community page online. You get to invite the people that you want to be a part of your network, and you get to delegate practical needs as they arise and ask for how and when the help is most needed. You can set up a calendar feature, and this allows people to volunteer to help with practical things like providing transportation, meals, childcare, or any other need that's listed. You can add personal messages, treatment updates, photos, any information that you feel is helpful for you or for the people who you surround yourselves with. It also links to Cancer Care's resources, and so it reminds you that there is that professional layer of support available too. So again, these are just a few ideas of some caregiver resources that might be helpful to you. Keep in mind that everyone has a different set of needs, so feel free to be in touch with Cancer Care if you have any additional questions about resources for caregivers. Our social workers will gladly speak with you in more depth about your needs and how we can help to get you connected. Again, the number is 1-800-813-4673, and our website is www.cancercare.org. Do reach out and let us know how we can best help you. Thank you so much for your time and attention today, and I'll go ahead and bring things back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. O'Brien. That was really outstanding. Lots of actually very excellent tips for people in terms of the caregivers and things that they can do and services available to them. And also all of the resources that Ms. O'Brien mentioned to everybody, you'll just know that they also will be sent to everybody. Some of you who are live streaming the program may have seen the announcements, but everyone else will be getting those materials in our follow-up email to all of you, or our follow-up for those of you listening to this on the telephone. We will be mailing that information to you, so you'll have equal access to all these great resources. So now we have time for questions. We have a lot of time for questions, so I'm going to ask Stephanie, if she would explain to all of you how to queue up for questions, and I'm going to ask her also to bring all of our speakers on board so that, indeed, we can address your questions as a group. So, Stephanie?
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchdown telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. Our first question comes from Stephanie Kay. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you very much, Caroline. This is an excellent, excellent presentation. I have two questions. My first question is, I am a double negative breast cancer survivor 10 years with HER2, and there doesn't seem to be organizations to help with the double negative. And also, what about the side effects, the permanent side effects that we have, like from radiation, chemo, and what about and surgeries, and if you get a peripheral neuropathy and lymphedema? I know there's a lymphedema organization, but what about for the peripheral neuropathy organizations? And are there anything out there to help you with the side effects? Are they doing new treatments like laser therapy or alternative like alpha lipoic acid and B6 and selenium? Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Stephanie, for your questions. And it sounds like you're actually your own caregiver to some extent in this particular question. And so I'm going to ask Dr. O'Sullivan if she can just address this in a general way in terms of just some of the questions you've raised. And, of course, we always recommend that people go back to the treating healthcare team. Many of these are problems that, of course, go on and need follow-up care. But, Dr. O'Sullivan, if you could just address this in a general way to help Stephanie guide her and others on the call who may have similar concerns about just managing side effects and things like that.
Sure. So, yeah, the peripheral neuropathy issue is very a common concern, and I think it's certainly very important to, you know, certainly touch base with your oncologist, as there are a number of different strategies, as you've already mentioned, you know, taking neuroprotective agents such as Cymbalta, gabapentin, the use of vitamin supplementation. And there are also, you know, studies looking at specifically stimulating the nerve endings in the hands and the feet. And there's this, we're actually looking at this here at Mayo Clinic, a study called the Scrambler Study. I think as well in terms of, you know, optimizing what you can do in terms of managing it from a medical perspective, but also certain websites such as clinicaltrials.gov, if you put in, you know, searches for like peripheral neuropathy, you may be able to come up with, you know, options for clinical trial participation locally. But again, I think it's just one of those important questions from a breast cancer survivor perspective, just to keep, you know, linked in with your own home oncologist and, you know, keep trying different strategies. But yeah, a lot of research is currently in progress, yeah.
Thank you, Stephanie, for bringing up those questions, and so hopefully these resources will help you and others on the call as well to really pursue any kinds of you know, side effects or discomforts that they're having as a result of their treatment, and long-term effects as well. We recognize that these are there, and there is help at hand, so we want you to be aware of that. And we have another question from one of our online participants. What tips can you provide to avoid burnout with my responsibilities as a caregiver? So I wonder, Ms. O'Brien, if you could start with that one, and then we'll have others also add to that.
Sure. So avoiding burnout can be a challenge, but I think the first step is recognizing that burnout can be very real, and trying to be preventative with self-care measures can go a long way. So making sure that you're eating 3 meals a day, trying to get an appropriate amount of sleep, going for your own doctor's appointments, and making time for yourself, those are really important sort of foundations of self-care. So we really encourage caregivers to start there and to make sure that you're consistent with those efforts. That can really help with preventing burnout. The other thing is, I think we can't underscore the importance of enlisting more support if and when possible. If you can delegate a few simple tasks to other family or friends or community members, that can give you some relief so that you have a little bit more time for yourself, and that can be a big way to avoid that caregiver fatigue or burnout that you mentioned.
And Dr. Kent, do you want to add anything?
Yes, thank you. I mean, I would just add to that, I think a preventative approach is the best way. It isn't always easy in the moment when you're actually experiencing burnout, but absolutely attending to the very basic needs that we all have, so making sure you're getting the right food and nutrition into your body, and making sure that you're getting as much rest as you can, and that often means having to put other things on the back burner. I also think that, you know, reaching out to a larger circle of support and taking the support when it's offered is also critical. In some cases, respite care can be an option, but as I mentioned before, it's often a very underutilized option, and it isn't a realistic option for everyone. So just trying to focus and pay attention to the sort of the basic needs, bringing it back down a notch to sort of nutrition, rest, and also I didn't mention exercise. Even if it's just a short 10-minute walk around the block can make a big impact to preventing burnout over the long run.
Well, that's excellent to hear. Those kind of breaks is what you're saying can be very helpful to people. Thank you. And Dr. O'Sullivan, do you want to add anything as well from your observations and working with the caregivers of your patients and what their experiences are?
Yeah, I think I would really reiterate a lot of that, like focusing on looking after yourself, quality of life, doing things that both you and the you know, the patient enjoy, you know, and also I think as well just making utility of any sort of complementary medical services that are available as well. I think people do find participating together as a group, doing things like yoga, you know, massage, relaxation techniques can help both the patient and the caregiver alike.
And, okay, and so we have a question here from one of our for some additional tips for the long-distance caregiver. So I'm going to ask Ms. O'Brien if you could say a bit more about that, such an important area people struggle with.
Right. Yeah, I think long-distance caregiving comes with so many unique challenges. One tip that I often give to long-distance caregivers is to have a home team and away team in terms of support. And what I mean by that is when you are staying where you normally stay, where you identify as home, make sure that there's support there. But chances are every once in a while you're going to visit or stay with your loved one who's the patient. And making sure that you've got some continuity of your own support or care while you're there, when you do pick up to go closer to be with them, having support there is really essential too, whether it's a drop-in support group or just having someone from home that can call and check in on you every once in a while. Just making sure that you have support in both places can be important. I think recognizing that long-distance caregiving is no less caregiving than sort of 24-hour heavy lifting is really important. Yes, of course, the roles look a little bit differently, but it can really impact the caregiver in the same way on the emotional level, and also comes with many feelings of guilt and fear for their loved ones. So I think recognizing that support is available even for people who feel like they're, quote-unquote, just offering emotional support is really essential. Long-distance caregivers tend to minimize their experience, and we just want to encourage them to know that there is a wealth of support out there, and we'll certainly do our best to try and help long-distance caregivers find that support wherever they are.
Excellent. And Dr. Kemp, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I think it was just said so perfectly. I mean, I think it's just really requiring, I think it requires sort of creative solutions and creative thinking through different scenarios to help get sort of widen the circle of support and to the extent possible, having really open communication with whatever that circle looks like. So, you know, sometimes it can be reaching beyond just sort of the usual suspects of someone's friend and family network. There are lots of different organizations that were previously mentioned earlier, you know, things like Lots of Helping Hands, and there are other programs that can help set up or help organize, I should say, support on the local level. So things like meal delivery. So, you know, you may not be able to be there for your loved one, you know, nearby, but you can help arrange that meals get delivered either through friends and family or that are local or through actually some companies that now provide sort of ready-made meal delivery. So that's an example of a way to kind of provide support at a distance. But I think that but it is a challenge, and it's something that I think requires, again, creative solutions and thinking through, you know, what are the ultimate priorities and goals that that the patient and his or her family have, and how can you meet them in creative ways.
Excellent. And that's excellent. It's really wonderful. And Dr. O'Sullivan, your experience with dealing with long-distance caregivers and probably talk to them on the phone or by email?
Yeah,
and how that...
I think it's kind of really been said. I think, as you say, it's just about kind of coming up with innovative ways that you uniquely can, you know, contribute to your loved ones, you know, while being on a daily basis. So, you know, certainly, you know, arranging food delivery, email, just even giving a quick 5-minute phone call, all of those things can, you know, really mean a lot.
Thank you. This is really, it's great to have this whole team. And I'm going to take one late-breaking question, actually, from Barbara. And especially for Ms. O'Brien, but I'll probably ask the whole team as well to join in. But I'll start with Ms. O'Brien. You suggest there are opportunities that can come from caregiving. How can you help caregivers avoid feeling that they're falling short if they don't see or feel those opportunities? So, Ms. O'Brien, if you could address that question, it's probably one that may be on the minds of many people on the call, and good that we could just address it before the call closes.
Sure. Sometimes in the throes of things, it's hard to see your way out of the stress. But I think encouraging caregivers to be a little bit more gentle with themselves, be patient and kind to themselves, give themselves positive affirmations when they feel like they've made even a small success, that's really a way of creating a little bit more emotional capacity, I think, for seeing those rewards and those opportunities. And it takes work. It's not always something that comes easy because cancer and caregiving come with a lot of responsibility. So I think enlisting support to help you find those opportunities and see them more clearly in the day-to-day is important, and our social workers and other supports in your life might be really helpful in doing that with you and joining you in the process.
Well, thank you. And Dr. Kent, do you add anything?
Yeah, I know. I think that was really well said. I would also say that I think sometimes, and this is where I think having support in the form of a social worker, for example, can or a therapist can really be helpful, but engaging in sort of like benefit-finding practice, so it could be, there's different ways of doing it, but it could be something like expressive writing, so writing in a journal every day, sort of writing down affirmations or things that one can be grateful about. That the practice and the ritual of that can actually help, I think, expand an awareness of the good in the sort of the throes of the situation, as Carly mentioned. And I think, again, attending to self-care practice, so the basics of, again, getting enough nutrition, getting enough rest, getting enough exercise, all of that helps with building resilience during the challenging time of the caregiving often entails and certainly navigating a cancer diagnosis and treatment.
Thank you. And Dr. O'Sullivan, do you want to add to this as well?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great idea to have this type of a call, especially because caregivers do such a wonderful job. And just from my daily experience, I mean, I really see there's just so many wonderful patient advocates out there. So I think it's just very important for us to, you know, congratulate them and let them know that their efforts are very much appreciated and they really do make a big difference.
Well, thank you. This is a great note to conclude the call. We're not ending quite yet, but indeed I want to thank our speakers. You've really all been outstanding. This has been really quite the outstanding program. It's one that we would like to offer more of. I think, as I believe Dr. Kent said, caregivers are a silent voice in many ways, and we want them to become a very vocal voice because we really need to be more attentive to how important they are in this whole in the care of people living with cancer and living with triple negative breast cancer. I did say that if indeed you didn't get to ask a question, and I know there are lots of you who have questions we didn't get to answer, I want to give you some resources to utilize in terms of getting your questions answered. So if you should have a question that's really medically focused, I definitely recommend you call the National Cancer Institute at 1-800-422-6237. Again, 1-800-422-6237. And if you have questions specific to getting support and financial assistance or counseling services from our oncology social workers here at Cancer Care and are dealing with triple negative breast cancer, I definitely suggest you call the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation helpline at 1-877-880-8622. And all of that information, of course, will be sent to all of you as well. Most importantly, as we're about to conclude the program today, we don't want any one of you to feel that you're alone in coping with being a caregiver for someone living with triple negative breast cancer. We want you to know that you're now part of this whole community of support. There are lots of resources for you, and we want you to utilize them as you feel would be helpful to you, and particularly the resources that are free and that are professionally, that people who are obviously very dedicated to this work would be very important for you to access those services. Even if you don't feel like things are really so very difficult, you don't have to wait to that point. Also, we are approaching a holiday time of year, and indeed, that poses its own particular challenges. And so it is okay to be proactive and contact for help ahead of time before the holidays and try to deploy and how you're going to handle all of that. So I want to thank you all for being on the call today. I think it's a great testament, I think, as our speakers have said, to each of you that you've taken the time to be on this call today. It means that you are trying in your way to kind of have some support for you in what you're doing and see this as a beginning approach to many other services that you can access. Again, I want to thank you all and wish you all a very fine day.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may now disconnect and have a wonderful day.